confronting the trends that lead to teen self-harm and suicide. You're listening to The Wrap from Central Florida Public Media. I'm Brendan Byrne. Last week, three students in the Seminole County School District died by suicide. CDC data shows that in 2023, nearly 40% of high school students experienced persistent feelings of sadness and hopelessness. The same report indicates 20% of students seriously considered suicide, with 10% actually making an attempt. One of the drivers of teen depression is social media, and one mental health expert sees the direct correlation between social media and cell phone usage and the mental health of children as young as 9.
There's also cyberbullying, the fear of missing out, and also the digital fatigue, I think, all go into those growing concerns.
A look at teen mental health in the chronically online era. That's ahead on The Wrap, the big stories this week from Central Florida Public Media. But first, these headlines. Ahead of January's legislative session, state lawmakers are talking about ways to possibly change a new law that restricts local government's home rule power. Central Florida Public Media's Molly Durig reports from this week's meeting of the delegation of state lawmakers who represent Orange County.
Orange County Mayor Jerry Demings made an impassioned plea for lawmakers to rework Senate Bill 180. The law effectively halts and in some cases reverses local government planning. The law is already facing legal challenges, including one from Orange County and more than 24 other Florida jurisdictions. Republican State Representative Doug Bankson represents parts of Orange and Seminole counties. He says the goal of SB 180 was to ensure people can rebuild quickly after storms, but that in reality, it's hurting local governments, including Bankson City of Apopka.
The sponsor of the Senate bill has already said he's looking to come back in and refine it. So I think we're going to have a positive move to find the right balance for this bill.
Republican State Senator Nick DeSegli of Pinellas County was SB 180's lead sponsor. Bankson says lawmakers didn't catch what he calls the nuance of the law until after it was passed. Molly Durig, Central Florida Public Media.
Meanwhile, the city of Deltona is backing out from a lawsuit challenging SB 180. The municipality had originally joined about 24 other local governments in the suit, which included Orange County. The legal fight over the controversial immigration detention center in the Everglades, known as Alligator Alcatraz, is on hold while the federal government shutdown drags on. WLRN's Natalie LaRouche-Pietri tells us more.
The Trump administration asked to pause the case, saying government lawyers aren't allowed to work during a shutdown. An Atlanta appeals court granted that request this week. But the environmental groups, who first sued in June, urged the court to keep the case moving. They argued that any delay could further damage the Everglades ecosystem. The Miccosukee tribe later joined the case. Immigrant rights attorneys have filed a separate lawsuit, saying that detainees there are being mistreated and denied access to adequate legal representation. I'm Natalie LaRouche-Pietri in Miami.
Florida's cell phone restrictions in classrooms seems to be working, according to a report published in the National Bureau of Economic Research this month. Central Florida Public Media's education reporter Danielle Pryor has more.
The report found that in the 2 years since Florida's cell phone restrictions during class time took effect in 2023, test scores improved and more kids were in school. Behavioral problems also decreased, although there was a slight uptick in suspensions, especially amongst Black students in the first months of the policy. But behaviors improved after the end of the first year.
That was Central Florida Public Media's Danielle Pryor reporting. These stories and more on our website. Visit cfpublic.org. Central Florida is joining the global 50th anniversary celebration of the cult classic film, The Rocky Horror Picture Show. The producer of one Orlando tribute says the film's message is still relevant today.
This was a way for people to be unapologetic about who they really are.
Celebrating Rocky Horror in Central Florida. That's this week on Spotlight. Get it where you get this podcast. Central Floridians were stunned by the news that three students in Seminole County School District had taken their own lives within the same week. Two 15-year-olds and a 16-year-old from different schools within the community. A brief warning, the next 10 minutes of this podcast will discuss a sensitive topic, suicide. CDC data shows that in 2023, nearly 40% of high school students experienced persistent feelings of sadness and hopelessness. The same report indicates 20% of students seriously considered suicide, with 10% actually making an attempt. One of the drivers of teen depression is social media. The 24/7 all-access and anonymous nature of platforms like Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook create a never-ending cascade of negative feedback loops, so much so that last year the state's legislature passed House Bill 3, prohibiting teens from establishing social media accounts. A federal judge put a temporary hold on the law's enforcement in June due to First Amendment issues. Marnie Stallman is the president and CEO of the Mental Health Association of Central Florida. She sees the direct correlation between social media and cell phone usage and the mental health of children as young as 9. Stallman spoke with Engage's senior producer, Richard Copeland, about why she feels HB3 is a step in the right direction and how the community can approach teen mental health.
There has definitely been a digital overload, and I think the pressure of creating online identity that exists today that is very different and unique from even 5 or 6 years ago. The constant connectivity creates pressures on our youth to maintain almost what we would refer to as a curated online persona, which causes all kinds of difficulties, obviously, when they try to pursue that. Obviously, there's also cyberbullying, the fear of missing out, and also the digital fatigue, I think, all go into those growing concerns. I had the opportunity to serve on the disciplinary task force for Orange County Public Schools almost 2 years ago, where this topic was brought up about the restriction of cell phone utilization on the campuses. And I voted in favor of that. I am a mom. My daughter is 17. She's a student in Orange County Public Schools. And I can tell you from just self-experience that she's reported not just better interactions with her peers, but a better opportunity that she has had to be more engaged and what I would call present in the moment, and has appreciated the reprieve of that constant bombardment that the social media elements present when you have access to those digital devices that are in your hand 24/7.
So what is a sign or a red flag, both for the youth and for the people in their life, that they're in too deep, that this has become too consumptive, and not just too consumptive, but destructive?
Well, one of the most serious red flags that I think a teen may be is when they begin to talk about the hopelessness or talk about wanting to disappear. And this can kind of show up in some very direct ways, you know, where they're saying, I wish I wasn't here. I wish I was somewhere else, or everyone would be better off without me, or I just want it all to stop. And it can be quite destructive in many cases.
Talk to me about the growth of youth athletics, the pressure that places on students. Creating a lifestyle out of youth athletics is putting extreme pressure on these kids.
Yeah. Well, certainly the performance anxiety, and I think the perfectionisms that athletes often feel, this intense pressure to win, to improve their stats, to meet expectations from their coaches and parents and peers, often leads to chronic stress and fear of failure and a distorted sense of their self-worth tied solely to the performance. And then when you kind of bring on now the name, image, and likeness, the NIL pressures, as that marketability increases as they move on from high school to college, I think it can be really quite intense. You know, our athletes are taught to push through pain, to tough it out, which can oftentimes discourage athletes, particularly in appropriately understanding and expressing where they are emotionally, because they've been told to push down, and those sports become their primary identity. And then we talk about setbacks and injuries that can trigger depression, isolation, and identity crisis, since everything is wrapped up into that persona.
Now, bringing this back into the impetus for this discussion, unfortunately, is that, you know, these cases out of Seminole County, and I don't want to dwell on any of the factors in the individual stories here, but when you see 3 students within a week, within the very same age range, within the same geographical region, what is your reaction?
I think what is unfortunate is that these 3 occurred so closely together, but the average rates of suicide in the United States right now are 125 deaths per week across the country, ages 10 to 24. So that's about 6,500 a year. And what I think is startling and about this occurrence is obviously that they occurred so closely together, but unfortunately, because it made the media, we're hearing about it. But the unfortunate truth about this is that suicides are occurring all around us on a weekly basis within this age group.
And I think one of the myths that go with that is when this happens to children that exist on the social fringe, that are heavily bullied, that might come from a specific economic sector or race even, that this is something that only LGBTQ kids do. We're not seeing that. This is a broad spectrum.
No. When the Mental Health Association was founded in 1946, its original name was the Central Florida Hygiene Society. And for a very long time, we kind of scratched our heads and thought, what a peculiar name. And now in 2025, at the cusp of celebrating our 80th anniversary, I think they actually got it right. It is hygiene. It's health hygiene. It's no different than our primary health hygiene, our dental hygiene, and our mental hygiene. And that means it's across the board. It doesn't discriminate. When you get a cavity, it doesn't care what your race, your gender, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation. It's a cavity. And when we talk about our mental health and our mental hygiene, it's similar in the fact that while there may be unique pressures and anxieties for any one of those groups I just mentioned, the effects are similar in that anxiety and depression is pervasive. And when we don't address it, when it is buried silently by stigma and fear of judgment, and we don't recognize warning signs or create opportunities to encourage help-seeking behaviors, we get these very unfortunate results where people harm, hurt, or ultimately take their own lives.
And you said the S word, stigma. It's very rational to compare mental hygiene to dental hygiene. You wouldn't hesitate to tell a friend, a coworker, that you're taking lunch to go get your teeth cleaned. We're not as apt to say that about seeking mental aid. So how do you break through that stigma, especially when you're talking about young people who are so sensitive to social reaction?
Yeah, so I'm going to offer three potential things to consider about answering that question. The first is to be a listener without judgment. That's to create a safe space where the child or the youth or anyone can feel heard and not evaluated, right? That we need to let them speak freely without interrupting or rushing in to fix things. I know as a parent, I try to be a fixer. I want things to always have a positive outcome, and that's not realistic. And so listening without judgment and validating that their emotions are real, even if they're not fully understood by you, is the first step. I think the second is that we have to learn to be honest and age appropriate. Children and our youth know when adults are withholding information, and we need to speak truthfully about difficult topics like mental health and loss and use language that's age appropriate, avoiding vague reassurances and euphemisms, and sharing what our feelings are about and how we're managing it and showing that level of vulnerability, I think, is another significant way to not just create a healthy emotional expression or model, but to impact stigma. And then the third is to reinforce the support and safety that the child needs to be aware of, and reminding them that it's okay, as we say here, to not be okay, and that resources, counselors, adults, hotlines, 988, are there to help when they need it, and that seeking help isn't a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength. And that means modeling, that means showing by example and doing. And that can be hard for adults, particularly parents, you know, where we're maybe afraid to show that vulnerability, and our kids, I think, are desperately looking for it.
That was Marnie Stallman, the president and CEO of the Mental Health Association of Central Florida, speaking with Engage's senior producer Richard Copeland. Engage has more on the issues of teen mental health and suicide. Listen wherever you get this podcast. If you or someone you know may be considering suicide or is in a crisis, call or text 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. That's it for The Wrap this week. This podcast is produced by Central Florida Public Media with editorial assistance from news director LaToya Dennis. I'm Brendan Byrne. This is The Wrap.